Today's episode brought to you by Prime Video. TV ratings for the tournament are up. Calipari staying. We don't know what's happening at Louisville. How big can a coaching staff get in college football? And boy, do we have some tales at the end of the people's. Stay for that, please.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It's too late to say Happy New Year. You don't care. You're just saying it. You're just saying there's no feel. You don't really care about my brackets. Why would you take my advice?
That's true.
I don't care.
Ross Dellinger.
Dan, I used to have a duck. Well,
you what?
My parents bought me. Yeah.
Pet duck.
So buried the lead here.
My
I'm guessing girls weren't a big part of your life at that time.
Dan. Come on, man. It's a low blow.
And SI's Pat 40.
Do we have kindergartners betting their ham sandwiches on the Super Bowl?
Didn't my school.
We might need to look into this.
Didn't my school. It was tough. It was a tough school. Our school colors were black and blue.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to Pod, presented by Prime Video. And I'm intrigued by this. The television ratings have been coming in for the March Madness for men's basketball tournament. And they have been strong. Now, we know that the TV networks have like little tricky ways of saying, you know, this is the best rating ever. Best rating for, you know, from 3:05 to 3:10 p.m. in 23 years. They trick stuff up. They include this. They include that. But undoubtedly, these TV ratings are good. I don't know if they're the greatest ever or not, but you had an average of, and I don't even know what this means, but an average of 8.5 million people watching Thursday. That was supposedly the most watched since 2015. You had the 8.3 on Friday is the most watched ever on a Friday. The most watched on a Saturday, 10.3 million. And so the first 3 days were all records. I'm not sure what CBS had on Sunday, but I'm guessing it's not too much down. We had some massive games. The Michigan State, North Carolina second round game did a 10.3 million viewers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an SEC football championship game.
Yeah, it's a big number.
That's a huge number.
Gonzaga, Kansas, before that did 8.3 million. Those are all, so that was, they were in their own kind of windows. Although I think there was some competition to State and UNC late. Purdue, Utah State did 8. I mean, these are really good TV numbers for basketball. And you kind of just go down. Oakland versus Kentucky, first round game, did 6.2 million. So that's, and I don't know, these are averages. I don't know how they figure it all out. Does not count the, I mean, I was watching Michigan State and North Carolina in a friend's basement. Like, you know, he's got a big setup down there. I mean, there's 25 people. I don't even know how they can count March Madness ratings in particular, but the ratings have been phenomenal. And yet we walked into this tournament hearing, and you know, we all agreed, you know, there's not a huge lottery pick coming that everyone wants to watch, right? That you're going to drag some NBA interest. There's not, this would be the same bit, but there aren't these like mega exciting players like Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, right? This is not the year of blue bloods. Carolina and Duke are still in this thing, but you know, the top seeds are generally good programs, but not Houston, Purdue, UConn. Those, you know, obviously UConn's more successful than all these blue bloods anymore, but they don't have that fan base. So it's not, you're not just riding off of that. Ohio State's not in it. Michigan, those teams aren't even necessary, although they've had great success. They bring huge fan bases, not there. And then there's the bit where there is increased competition from the women's side. No, the women's basketball tournament is not bigger than the men's basketball tournament and is far from it, but it is increasingly popular. And, you know, you could be peeling off 100,000 viewers there, 250,000 viewers there, whatever. Caitlin Clark's game did 3.2 million on Saturday, I think it was. Her first round game against Holy Cross.
And won the second one like 4.9?
Yeah, 4.9 on Monday night. Now, that got close, but that was not competing with the men's tournament.
Yeah, wasn't competing with anything, no.
Right, wasn't competing, but there it was. Let me find this Caitlin Clark. Iowa, it's a team game. It's a team. My team is on the floor.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. It was a decent. Some of those people might have chose to watch Caitlin Clark instead. So whatever. I don't think the audiences are exclusive. So we come in with all these kind of headwinds, and some of them are temporary, right? Next year you're going to have Flag at Duke, and some of these guys maybe everyone's going to want to watch. But we produce big numbers. So why is what I'm wondering. Gambling clearly is a big part of this. Sports wagering is a big part of this, but there was sports wagering in many locations last year. Is that helping? Is the more acceptance of it, or are more people getting? I'm like, I don't know. I got no idea. So I turn to my experts here. well, I don't have any, but I got you guys. Pat, what do you think? Why is the rating so good for this event when we were told they would not be so good? I guess I thought they'd be good, but not. I didn't think they'd be like, you take down 10% or something. Hey, makes sense. All right, go ahead. I talked enough.
I do not work for Nielsen Research, so we'll state that off the top. But, for one thing, the tournament's always watched, no matter what people say. And, yeah, maybe the most ill-informed hot take of last week from some people is more people are going to watch the women's tournament than the men's. Completely not true. A lot of people are watching both, which is great. And I've watched plenty of both, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think whether it's just the fact that the games have been quite compelling. I mean, there was a lot of upsets that first day, second day. We got plenty of those, first day especially. And then you settled into more brand names playing brand names. I mean, Texas versus Tennessee is two big fan bases going at each other. Kansas playing in the second round certainly is good for business. Playing Gonzaga, while Gonzaga is a small school in terms of alumni base, a lot of people know them and watch them at this time of year. Four ACC teams advancing. There's brand names people can get attached to, and I do think there are some storylines that people are interested in. I think UConn going for a repeat. There's a lot of people in the Northeast that are UConn fans and interested in UConn. Purdue, Zach Edey has become like a lightning rod. You either really like him or you're outraged at what he gets away with or whatever. The 7'4" guy who's the 2-time National Player of the Year, people are taking sides on him. And I think that's helped to a degree. There's been a lot of scoring. We got Virginia out of the tournament on the first night. That was a good thing. And we've seen some really high-octane offense. Since then, bunch of teams scoring 100 points, going up and down the floor. So I don't have this is why I think you can concoct a number of ideas. There may be some of it. I don't know what the weather was like in parts of America over the weekend, but if the weather was bad, people stay in and watch more TV. It could be as simple as that, but people did watch, and I think they were rewarded with a pretty entertaining product for 4 days.
Dan, I have a number for you. 2.7 billion. That's the amount of money that was projected to be bet on the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. I think that's a big reason why, as you mentioned, sports betting has increased viewership and driven it. But I think with any sporting event that has massive implications, especially like playoff, type of atmosphere, I think people just love to watch. I mean, people love to watch elimination games because of the what's on the line. I think that drives a lot of viewerships to the women and the men in any playoff or postseason. Shoot, we see it in women's college World Series stuff. I mean, I think people just like when the stakes are really high, and so I think that's why all those playoff events, will drive. Viewership. We talk about betting in the almost $3 billion that was supposed to be bet last weekend. Just some like news as we're talking on the pod about betting, which I didn't realize this, but the NCAA is encouraging states to prohibit prop bets. And they've been doing it apparently for a while. They've gotten a few states, Ohio, Vermont, Maryland, to ban prop bets. And they're trying to encourage more before this next slew of games. They're trying to encourage more states to ban all prop betting because of harassment and things like that, that athletes are getting. So kind of an aside there, a little bit interesting as we head into the next weekend.
Yeah, I real quick want to follow up on the prop bet stuff. All you have to do to just get people to take those off the board is send them the Jonte Porter stuff and say, this is happening at the NBA level. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I did hear some like third hand talk, like some of the stuff that has come at like the scrubs at the end of the bench for some schools that get in games, and whether they make or miss shots can affect the point spread at the end of a game, who covers, and the amount of abuse those guys are taking. Like, that is not good. If, you know, some kid gets his 2 minutes of NCAA tournament action and misses a layup and the team you bet on didn't cover, and all of a sudden you decide it's time to heap abuse on that kid, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, it's completely unfair, ridiculous, and there are definitely some psychopaths that would do that, or, you know, hold the ball. No, I'm going to jack a shot up there and miss it. And then the other guy comes down and hits it. You know, you just ran out the clock. Terrible. No place for it. Do not gamble that way. This is why gambling on something like the NCAA basketball tournament is, especially a high point spread, is crazy. We've done the high point spread, and they're crazy all the time. Like, honestly, go ahead and do it if you want. But I've done the high point spread before on Race for the Case. Well, I think I did a Hawaii Michigan game, and basically it was like 60 something. And then like Michigan had one, I think they botched a punt or something. And because of that, like, it just takes one thing.
Yeah.
And then you're done. And you can literally point to the one play that cost you because the point spread's so big. That is a dark side. I don't, if you don't know the Jonte Porter story, it's really interesting. He is plays for the Raptors, and he was betting. Well, they're investigating some allegations and some possibilities. Let's not use Jonte's name. Let's just say it was another guy. But I don't want, because I haven't researched the story enough. But basically, somebody would in the NBA may have been having some bets placed on a prop and saying he wouldn't get it, right? So it's like, if Pat's playing in the NBA, Pat 40 plus or minus three threes. Well, it's pretty easy for you to only hit two. You just don't take a third.
Don't take it. Yeah.
You make sure you miss, or you get a sprained ankle, right? Or something.
Yes. A case of the certain player under investigation, you take yourself out of the game and don't come back with some malady.
Mystery thing. But these bets were like 10K, which was baffling to people, because it's like, dude, you're in the NBA. Do not mess your NBA career up.
Yeah, what was his NBA contract?
Well, whatever. Millions of dollars,
Right, so 10K, that's crazy. I think people do things like that just for the rush.
Actually, he was making $415,000 this year.
Yeah, but he's still, like on a two-way deal or
actually,
something.
10K is a pretty nice chunk.
Okay, 10K is not bad then,
But guess what he'll be making next year? If this is true.
Zero.
Yeah, that's right.
So it'll make ever again in
Turkish
the NBA.
League. Yeah. Right. Anyway, don't do it. But you can see where this would be completely enticing for players, too. Now, these are elimination games, not, you know, I think it was the March 20th game against the Kings is under the old Raptor King clash on March 20th. who among us doesn't remember that one? it was a glorious night. Kings Raptors. This is why our ratings are so high.
Mm-hmm.
I think the gambling is huge. I also think that's why, like, this is a side one I just kind of thought of, but like, the one beauty of college athletics is it does really well with young people, college kids particularly, and then recently after. And then I think sometimes fans fade away from it. But like early 20s, and those are big gamblers. They're at my gambling 10K. I watch like the coverage by Barstool, which is, you know, very popular at that group. It's all about the gambling. They're just sitting there screaming about their bets all the time. But and so that's not traditional, you know, button down. Let's get guys in suits behind a desk on a CBS thing. But that's very effective in bringing people in on this, too. So I think that the gambling can be, there's certainly a sinister side to it and a disappointing side, but it also can create a lot of excitement. Even if you're not the people gambling, you just want to watch Dave Portnoy lose money or something, or win money, whatever you want to do.
Speaking of just this topic, I don't think we've even discussed it, but I think it happened earlier this week or last week. Did you guys see Rhys Davis was, I think, hosting a betting segment on ESPN, and whoever he was talking to, a betting expert, I don't remember who it was, but she said she was going through all these bets, right, that you could make and all these different plays. And I think he said something like, what you're talking about doesn't sound like betting. It sounds like risk-free investment. obviously, with ESPN's involvement with ESPN Bet and all that, he took a little flack for that. I don't think we'll be hearing anything like that again come out of his mouth. But you got to be careful with those things for sure.
Please. I mean...
Dan, come what on. You got there, Dan?
Really? He got flack for that?
You got a little flack.
It's a joke.
Risk-free investment, Dan.
Okay, so really, there was somebody was 28 minutes into a segment on gambling on ESPN and heard Rhys Davis say it's risk-free investment and actually believed that betting on sports is a risk-free investment.
Ran to the window.
Right, yeah. And bet his entire mortgage on it. Rhys Davis said, I mean, come on.
These are the people that end up suing because there's not enough strawberry in the Pop-Tart.
Yeah, exactly. Okay? Free Rhys Davis, okay? Come on now. Like, at some point, people have to have like some responsibility for their own actions. Clearly, betting on sports. There's nobody who thinks betting on sports is risk-free investment. It's impossible because I don't care. You're like you're in kindergarten and you bet, the next day's, half a ham sandwich or whatever on the Super Bowl and you lose your sandwich. I mean, come on. Unfair. That's a joke.
Do we have kindergartners betting their ham sandwiches on the Super Bowl?
It did in my school.
We might need to look into this.
It did in my school. It was tough. It was tough school. Our school colors were black and blue.
had to fight your way on the bus and fight your way off.
That's right. Yep. We were gambling on everything. Dice games on the bus. No. I mean, come on. All right. Anyway, aside, somebody was a little sensitive on that one. Okay. I didn't know if that's the story. All right, so I don't know what else to say, but I think the ratings will be even better, will remain really good, because the one downside to like non-traditional upstarts getting deep in the tournament is they don't have the fan base that generates. Yeah. It's not a downside to me because I'm not a television executive, and based on the gazillion ads that are running in these games and these 14-minute TV timeouts followed by 12 seconds of action and then a foul and 14 more minute TV time. I'm not worried about CBS, but
the ratings are going to be great going forward too.
Yes, that's what I mean. You get a George Mason in there, you get a whatever, somebody in the Final Four, FAU. FAU does not have the fan base that would the built-in fan base from last year that you would get if, and it'd be certainly a North Carolina, but like you said, even if it's a, you know, whatever, Purdue or anybody else that's in this thing. So I think we're going to have a great weekend of action, and the TV people will be happy, and people will keep gambling. Leave the players alone, please.
Yeah. I'm going to real quick. I will go through. All right. UConn, big fan base going for a repeat. They're absolutely watching. San Diego State, I was shocked how many of their fans showed up at the Final Four last year. They got a good fan base. They're watching. Illinois, really huge. Hungry. Hadn't been to this level in a long time. They're watching. Iowa State, great fan base. They're watching. North Carolina, huge fan base. Alabama, big fan base. Clemson, big fan base. Arizona, big fan base. Houston, they've rallied around that team. Duke is Duke. North Carolina State, they're hungry. fans are hungry. Marquette hadn't been this far since 2013. Purdue, massive fan base, dying to win. Gonzaga, brand name. Creighton, they put a lot of people in a 15,000-seat arena. Tennessee, 20,000-seat arena. Going to be a lot of people in attendance and a lot of people watching.
Yeah. Oh, they also, they sold like 97% of tickets in the first two rounds.
They did. Yeah. I mean, I was in Indy and like it was absolutely Mackey South. It was just deafening Purdue crowd.
So anyway, good news there. We talked last time about John Calipari and Kentucky. What's going to happen? He's back. $33 million. Tough to do. Cal is coming back. He says going to no more Bahamas trip in the summer. They're going to work on defense. I don't know. He says he's changing some stuff up. We will see what happens. It's got another good recruiting class coming in. We will see who stays, who goes, who they pick out on the portal. Cal was the master of coaching 19-year-olds when that would win you the title. Now, particularly with the COVID year, that has been not been the case. But he can get old if he wants. This is the thing. Kentucky can do whatever it wants. If it wants to win on the, graduate transfer portal, they can go get those guys or not. But thoughts on John Calipari returning to Kentucky, Pat?
Yeah, first of all, this, I think, is largely driven by the disastrous contract that Mitch Barnhart gave him. And I think Mitch has probably escaped a little bit too unscathed in terms of being on the hook for this terrible deal. We talked about it a lot on the last podcast, so I won't belabor it. But to give any coach a lifetime deal, and I did it in like 2018 or so because of whether he was maybe going to UCLA, was a panic move, an overreaction. For a guy whose best days were already behind him at that point and has done nothing since then to earn it. Yeah, Calipari's going to change. I'll miss the August trip to Canada or the Bahamas or wherever where they play a bunch of like janitors and waiters and win by 70 points and the fan base is all, oh my God, we're going to be so good. Holy cow, we're going 40-0. So I'll miss that. But yes, perhaps they should stay in Lexington and play a little defense. I don't know. It's a thought. Learn some of those sorts of things. They'll go out. Yes. I mean, as you said, Dan, they'll get as many high-level transfers as they can or they need. We'll see how they put it together. They do have some excellent freshmen coming in. I think the biggest question is whether there's any chance Reed Sheppard would stay for a second year, just as a Kentucky guy who could, I'm sure, make a massive amount of NIL. I would imagine everybody else who's draftable will probably go. But at this point, look, they've had plenty of talent for years. They've done nothing with it. 2-7 in the postseason since 2020 in the last four postseasons. It's a disaster from Kentucky standards, and the fans are not real happy that he's coming back. So, we've heard it before in the offseason. Yeah, it's going to change this, going to change that. And inevitably, they'll start bringing in players, and then by the end of the summer, everybody's going to be talking, watch out for Kentucky, watch out for Kentucky. Maybe this year it'll finally be true, but right now it's not.
I think if you were going to fire John Calipari, you need to have a plan set up, which will lead us into our next school.
Yes.
But you can't, to just fire him right now and then kind of flail about and say, oh, I hope this, and maybe they'd made some inquiries too, But like it would be one thing if I'm just making this up. But like if Jay Wright was like, hey, gives him the little head nod to somebody who gives the head nod to somebody, gives the head nod to Mitch Barnhart. And you go, all right, I'm going to fire John. I got $33 million because I'm going to get Jay Wright. Or, boy, Billy Donovan gets fired after 33 games next year in the, Chicago. And then he's just sitting there. Now maybe it's a different call, but to just fire John Calipari right now, A, you're going to pay this bill, and then who are you getting? And if you don't have, I no doubt Kentucky will attract a high-quality candidate that is not currently on the market because they don't want to be. They're not interested in these other jobs, or it's still in the tournament. But you kind of want to have a pretty good idea what you're getting because John Calipari has not done a good enough job the last X number of years, but he hasn't been that bad. They still have very good regular seasons. They still play an exciting brand of basketball. They still bring in a lot of top recruits, which Kentucky fan has been accustomed to. And so it certainly has not been enough by any means. And they were justified if they wanted to fire him, but it hasn't been an abject disaster. And you can only need to go down the road to Louisville, which I think is, not as coveted of a job as Kentucky, but should be pretty coveted. And with the tradition and the fan base and the ACC membership and all of that, at least temporary, whatever the ACC means at this point, but certainly for basketball, is a big deal. And they are, last I saw, we'll see by now, you might have a coach, but like, if you believe social media and some of the reports out of Louisville, Richard Pitino, we're going to bring a Pitino 2.0. unbelievable. Unbelievable. Not that against Richard Pitino, sins of the father, but still, like, really? Not a candidate, but Bob Huggins trying to say he'd like to be a candidate. I'm sure he would. They could do worse, though. If Huggs is sober, we had a potential, wild stories, potential death threats were being given to candidates that turned out to not be true. I love you guys at Louisville. Like, it's just a mess until it's beautiful. Like, when they're beautiful, they are like winning national titles, putting Lamar Jackson out there. When they are a mess, they are a beautiful mess. And right now, it is, we're not sure. They're in the chop of the Ohio River right now trying to figure it out.
By the way, didn't Huggins say maybe a couple weeks ago or so, he said that he had been sober for 300 days, the last 300 days, and I believe he was arrested for the DUI 280 days before that.
Yeah. Well, close enough. Look, we hope he is doing well. I don't want to make fun of anyone's recovery. But I don't know. I have a hard time saying anything bad about Bob Huggins, but maybe needs a little more time. Not the Louisville job.
Well, no, he does not need the Louisville job. He's also not getting the Louisville job, but that's shocking. I know, but that's a major breaking news point. But yeah, Huggs had people calling Louisville on his behalf, like maybe Saturday or Friday last week. So there's that. And then, yes, when Richard Pitino's name came up, I was like, okay, this has now become the most Louisville story ever, and it's just, as you said, Dan, kind of the constant churn of what the hell is happening there. That's been the state of the basketball program since 2015, since I wrote the story about the entertainment in the basketball dorm. That was led to the book, that led to the postseason ban, that led to all kinds of stuff. And then it's just literally has been one thing after another since then. And Louisville just can't get out of its own weird way. Mm. And this search, which frankly almost started in December. They almost fired Kenny Payne in December when he lost by like 15 to Arkansas State. And they should have. Really, they shouldn't have brought him back this year, but they should have gotten it going then. And instead, but still, they knew they were going to hire a coach, and they just haven't been able to line it up where we got our guy, period, no matter what. And I think Dusty May took him to the altar and maybe jilted him at the altar, but you got to have a backup plan that you fire on immediately, and that clearly has not been the case. And so, yes, we reached a point where Josh Schertz from Indiana State, who has the Sycamores in the NIT Final Four, which will be in Hinkle Fieldhouse, which will be an Indiana State party, was like, he was on the list, but he was down the list. And it's like, whether he's given an indication, hey, we're going to have to go another direction. And so he's right now close to getting a deal done with St. Louis. And all of a sudden, nature abhors a vacuum and more names start coming up. And, Richard Pitino, what could go wrong? I mean, if you want America to continue to look at Louisville basketball and say, what the hell is going on down there? Hiring Richard Pitino would probably accomplish that. He may get in and do a fine job if he's the guy, and I don't know that he is. But to Dan's point, this may end up being settled by the time this podcast airs, but no matter who they bring in now, an edgy, freaked out, easily freaked out fan base could be further on edge and more freaked out.
The seats in the press conference room are getting a little dusty, huh? About four
they
days.
They did set those
days.
Up on Friday. Friday, yeah, five yeah. days and counting.
It didn't quite happen. Didn't quite happen. Well, it'll be interesting to see where those ones go. All right, we'll be back right after this message, which are updated Final Four picks, perhaps. All right, we have to make picks. We've been told we have to redo our Final Four picks or stick with the ones you have.
That's a problem for you.
I picked three. In the spirit of Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm ending, this is his last one, he says. It's one of my favorite episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm you didn't watch was when Larry, it's like January, like, I don't know what the date was, the 12th or something, and woman cheerfully wished him a happy new year, and he declared it was, isn't it too far past the new year to really say happy new year? Mm-hmm. And he got offended and created the whole episode was Larry being angry that someone wished him happy new year past the date of when you can ask happy new year. In the spirit, I feel, why do I have everyone? What's your Final Four? What's your brackets? How are your brackets? Your brackets busted. Your brackets doing well. You know what? I don't want to participate.
Dan Wetzel, human killjoy.
I am Larry David right now. This is my spirit animal. And it's, I don't, what do you care? You don't really care. You don't really care. What do you want me to say? Ah, Oakland killed my bracket. I had Kentucky in the Elite Eight. You don't care.
Well, we ask you so that we can tell you about ours.
Yes. How's your fantasy football team doing? Oh, you wouldn't believe it. I had and then Mahomes sprained his ankle, and oh my God, I lost. Then did you see Monday night? The one guy, all right. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Why how's do your I golf have to game here? Let me tell you about my golf game for 20 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, I chipped one in. I then four putted, but all right. So I don't know if I'm going to participate.
Oh my God.
It's two bar pass January 1st to wish me a happy new year. Pat 40, your initial picks, UConn, Houston, Creighton, and Baylor. Well, Baylor isn't going to be in the Final Four. We know that. So who do you, your updated picks?
Yeah, Scott Drew's on the bad list for flopping against Clemson. So I'll stick with the other three, although I the way Purdue play, once Purdue got past its gag reflex there in the first round, look out. Boy, they were very impressive. But I'll stick with Creighton out of the Midwest. I'll stick with Houston, although they had their own near-death experience. Certainly against Texas A&M, and both Duke and Marquette look good there. I will stick with UConn because, of course, I'll stick with UConn. Have you seen them? From the shattered bracket that was Baylor, I think I'm going to take Arizona because I think they've got an easier game, perhaps, against Clemson than North Carolina does against Alabama. And Arizona's playing very, very well so far through two games. They've got all the pieces. They look like they're locked in enough defensively, and they're going to keep focused. Although I will say a North Carolina Arizona Caleb Love game would really be interesting because Caleb Love was a key player for the Tar Heels for 3 years and then transferred to Arizona and became the Pac-12 Player of the Year. Like, North Carolina got better without him, and he got better without North Carolina. So that would be a fun regional final there. But I'll take Arizona from that region.
Mm-hmm. Ross?
Yeah, I think I have three or four still alive.
Oh, yeah, wait. I can list you. Houston, Purdue, Arizona. Auburn is out.
Yeah. Yeah, the Auburn bracket
Auburn almost beat the Ivy League champion, Ross.
I know. Darn. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Briefly on the Ivy League champion. We have this little bit on the Ivy League. Harvard freshman guard Malik Mack has entered the NCAA transfer portal. He was a big star. I just want to get this before I forget. He's had a big freshman season at Harvard and can clearly maybe get some portal money. Malik, I don't know you. I wish you the best. Think twice about
before giving up the Harvard degree.
You're at Harvard. Yeah. Okay.
Money, Dan. Money.
Yeah. You're at Harvard. Okay, first off.
Money now, not later.
Let's like, you don't transfer from Harvard. You just graduate from Harvard. Or you leave because your roommate's Mark Zuckerberg and he just created. Okay. Yeah. I don't know you. I don't know the circumstances. I don't know what someone's offering a guy who averaged 17.2 a game in the Ivy League. I understand the dream of playing major college basketball and all the excitement of that. You're at Harvard. You know what the dream is? You know what the American dream is? I went to Harvard.
Yeah.
Everyone else goes, we're the Harvard of Alabama. Yeah. We're just the Harvard.
Yeah. the way to play that is get your degree and grad transfer. Like,
grass.
That, remember, yeah, my go. Favorite college yeah. football Four. Player a few years ago was a tight end who got went to Stanford, graduated from Stanford, and took his grad year at Hawaii. That's mm-hmm. how to play the system.
Yeah, that's perfect.
What about that guy Thor from Harvard? Remember, he got two. Oh, yeah. He was a good
transferred
hockey.
To Louisville.
Louisville, right?
His he name graduated. Is Thor.
Thor yeah, Griffin,
a defensive yeah. tackle. Defensive
he graduated, tackle. Yeah. And now he's going to Louisville. But he got his Harvard degree.
Right.
Perfect. Go for
it. He's on. Somebody told me he's on the freaks list of, or he's going to be on the freaks list of Bruce Feldman.
Don't spoil the freaks list, Dan.
I'm sorry. Sources.
Spoiler alert.
Sources. I don't know. He's an incredible athlete. He was a great hockey player, and he just got too big. Got too big to play hockey. He's 6'2", 320. As a hockey fan, I would love to have seen this. I would absolutely have loved to see. What the heck? Shot blocking defenseman. Anyway, just in Harvard, what are you doing? You have $40 billion in your endowment and you might lose your point guard to an NIL deal to like, you know, what is happening? Anyway, where were we?
You were crushing, trampling Ross's picks here.
Go ahead.
You did. You stepped all over me, but now you brought up an even more interesting part, which is schools tapping into their endowment for athletics.
It's against the law. You cannot do that.
Which, yeah, probably isn't wise. Although some schools are sure trying to get around it and are toying with the idea as they're about to probably directly pay athletes. So that should be interesting to watch.
I don't believe that is allowed. I don't believe that is allowed. And I don't think Harvard is going to risk its 40 plus. It's probably higher than that.
Well, not Harvard. No. No. But there are others.
Texas, maybe. Texas.
Yeah,
if you are risking your endowment, the taxes on your endowment for football. Not even
sounds that's like
Grand Canyon like, stock and manipulation or something.
Sounds like a hook'em play.
I don't know.
Are you 49. Doing stepping all over my Final Four?
Go ahead, please. Okay. Show's so going
let
great.
The man breathe.
Houston, Purdue, and Arizona. Yeah, my one bracket, the one side of the bracket, the one quadrant that I screwed up is, of course, the one with UConn, because for whatever reason, I had Auburn beating UConn and Auburn in the Final Four. So from that bracket, I'll say UConn. So UConn, Houston, Arizona, and Purdue. And then I have my two championship matchups are still alive. I have Arizona playing Houston for all the marbles.
There you go. Yeah, I got UConn, Houston for all the marbles. So I'm alive there, too.
All right.
How about your three, Dan?
Yeah,
how about your final three?
What you got there, buddy?
First off, I looked it up. January 7th is the latest date you can say Happy New Year. You cannot say Happy New Year after January 7th.
Really?
Yes.
I thought it would at least be through January.
It's been a week.
I know. I'm totally fine with that. I'm fine with that. And I think we should actually have a whole calendar of when the calendar expires, you know, like everything. I was absolutely mortified there were people in my neighborhood who had Christmas lights on their Christmas trees or in their front windows till like February 1st. Complete outrage.
That. Yeah,
you can't do that. You can't do that.
I was just too lazy to take it down.
Yeah,
long story, but we have a Mardi Gras tree. So we convert our Christmas tree to a Mardi Gras tree, at least when we used to live in Louisiana. So we still do it here, even though people get very confused because nobody knows what Mardi Gras is in Washington, D.C. But so we had ours up still through Mardi Gras.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Did you put light? I mean, did you have it lit up every
day?
Well,
that's the thing. The tree is a white tree. It's a fake white tree. Okay. And it has pink lights and pink flamingo decorations because we used to live in, of course, Louisiana in a neighborhood in Baton Rouge where the biggest parade in Baton Rouge was held, which was Spanish Town Mardi Gras in the color theme every year for Spanish Town Mardi Gras was pink and the mascot was flamingos. That's what it was. So our tree was a Mardi Gras tree, really, that we just put up early for Christmas.
Okay. Non-traditional tree, but that's like the people that have their tree lit still in their front window till February. Yeah. Yeah. I have a major problem with them.
DC has a real issue with people, you know, you put your tree to the street in the garbage or whatever takes it here. And people, we will see Christmas trees well into March on the street, like just laying in the street that people have finally put on the curb.
Better than Jimbo Fisher doing it in November.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Greatest Christmas tree in NCAA football history. All right, I got UConn. I'm going to do this because out of protest. Play the curb music as I do this. I'm going to open a spite store. I'm going to open a spite podcast just to attack this podcast because I have to do this. My final three were UConn, Houston, and Creighton. So, perfect 3-0. I'm perfect 3-for-3 here. 3-for-3. I have to pick a fourth. So, what bracket am I missing? I don't know.
You're missing the West. North Carolina, Alabama, Clemson, Arizona.
North Carolina, Kansas.
North Carolina, Alabama, Clemson, Arizona.
Ooh, man, I like
Mark. What if we have a Clemson-Bama matchup that doesn't involve Dabo or Nick Saban?
Will they show up? I really like Alabama, but I like Mark Sears a lot. Hell, I'll go in Alabama. Carolina probably do it. But it's too late to say Happy New Year. You don't care. You're just saying it. You're just saying there's no feel. You don't really care about my brackets. Why would you take my advice?
That's true. I don't care. Actually, I do care. We're in the Yahoo Expert Pick'em poll.
See?
Where are we at there, Dan? Have you checked it?
I have no idea. Perfect. Brackets were perfect.
Did I tell you? I will say this. My daughter who lives in a, you know, mountain village in Peru.
Oh, you said that last time. Yeah, she's leaving.
Did I? Okay.
Yeah.
99.7 percentile of America in the world. It's ridiculous.
See, when you tell that story, I care. People don't care what my picks were. Yeah. Let me text Shohei Ohtani, see who's got. Maybe he's got some insight on this.
Yeah. Ask the interpreter.
Ross, you've got also the NCAA hockey tournament starting this weekend. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I know nobody cares, but I do.
I'm going with the Denver Pioneers there.
Frozen Four is in a couple weeks. Yeah.
That's right.
The big controversy is the NCAA has one of their regionals only seats 3,000 seats. It's like some minor league rink in St. Louis. Mm. And North Dakota, Michigan State, and Western Michigan all are in it.
Uh-oh.
And they can all drive. So the tickets are like insane.
Yeah.
But they said that when they were bidding in 2020 during COVID, no cities bid for the West Regional of the hockey. So this St. Louis is hosting the Frozen Four next year. So they gave this like side rink in the suburbs or something is somehow hosting this event. And now it's like ticket Armageddon because it's within like 6 hours of all the Michigan schools and not. And so, I mean, 3,000
North Dakota cares. Yeah.
Each school only got 400 seats as their allotment.
Yikes. That's too bad they couldn't get the Blues rink. I mean, that's, you know, big arena.
That would be fine. That would be probably too big. They go to kind of these secondary cities. I think they're in like Providence, Springfield, and Sioux Falls. I mean, it's the hockey tournament, you know, but the environment will be incredible. 3,000 seats.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the problems they have in the hockey tournament gets no respect. It's like on ESPN News or something. Like, you gotta.
But at least
it's great.
It's on.
It's all game sevens. Like, game seven hockey is unbelievable, right? Like Ross said, like, you want to watch this time of year too. I'll watch like some wrestling or whatever. I mean, if they're playing for a title, I'm intrigued. So
good. I'll I'll see you on the live stream for NCAA men's swimming later
well,
today.
Well, maybe not that, but I do predict Boston College will win. The Boston College is loaded. Anyway, hockey is great now. These kids are not going to the NHL. They're not going to play junior hockey. They're going to NCAA. College hockey has the best. I'm hijacking. They have the best rules. And think about these rules that would blow the minds of basketball or football. Blow their minds. Mind you, this is the same organization, the same athletic departments, right? How do they pick the field? One computer. Pairwise.
Oh, boy.
One computer formula. You go into the season, that's the formula, top 16, and they don't quite seed them out because they got some hosting rules. No committee.
Wow. That's why Colorado College got screwed, huh?
That's DCS, but with one computer.
One computer. Imagine trying to even propose this for basketball or football. You can't do it. It'd be wrong. Works, literally works over here.
Dan, I found the Yahoo expert picks. Right now, the ranking. There's 31 of us. And Dan, you're 25th.
Hey.
I am 15th. So we're, we're not right in the middle. I'm right in the middle. I'm poised for to make a leap. We'll see.
Women's bracket. I picked all the favorites.
Well, let's
I don't know
see
how I did in the women's bracket.
Let's see.
Okay. Other rules they have in hockey. Okay. You can get drafted and still play college hockey.
Right.
So now that's really an NHL rule that is everyone is 18 is draftable, but they draft players. So you get drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs and you're 18 and they go, yeah, well, I think I'd rather go to Minnesota and play because you're not ready for the NHL. And they go, great. And they work with the programs and the coaches and they develop the players through college hockey. So college hockey now has all this talent. Boston College is loaded with first round picks. If you say that in basketball, you won't be committed to the team. We can't have guys come. You go, what about a guy who played 2 years for you, goes in the draft, doesn't get drafted, doesn't like his spot? Could he come back? No. He signed with an agent. In hockey, they don't care.
Very good point. That's a major difference.
How is the rule one and another? What?
Dan, hold up here on the Yahoo expert. What did you put your name as?
I have no
idea.
Did you
put your name as CFE? The College Football Inquirer?
Oh, yeah, College Football Inquirer.
Well, then you aren't in. Then I was looking at we have a Dan in here. I thought that was
Dan
you.
Dan Devine.
So there you go.
College Football Inquirer. How am I doing?
What place is Dan?
I was getting.
Yeah, I know. Now I got to go back and see.
It's past January 7th. You can't say Happy New Year.
In the women's bracket, you're doing quite well. You are sixth out of 31 in the women's bracket. In the men's bracket, you are slightly ahead of me. You are 13th. There you go. Well, I was looking. I saw Dan, so I thought that was you. But then I saw CFE.
I would think picking only 3/4 of a Final Four will eventually come back to bite you. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Michigan State with a Frozen Four bid on the line. And I want Boston College and Boston University to meet in the championship game. That's just as a fan. UMass is in the event, too.
Denver Pioneers are coming to wreck
UMass versus Denver. We could put a wager on this.
There you go. Let's do it.
See? What do you got? Yeah, nothing. Anyway.
I said let's do it. We'll bet.
All right, we'll bet. We'll figure out the bet. Ross, you have a story on the football. We don't have enough football coaches in America, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
The poor guys are getting no instruction. still running the wing T out there. What is this proposal and what is happening with unlimited coaches?
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now, the only coaches, the only staff members on a football staff who can actually offer skill instruction, they call it, to players are the 10 assistants and the one head coach. Overall, that's 11 what they call accountable coaches. So support staff people, analysts, consultants, quality control folks. They are not supposed to actually coach, even though that rule is bent quite a bit in broken quite often, probably. And so because of that, they're just planning on, at least by according to this proposal, that is just a proposal for now, this proposal would let everybody on staff offer skill instruction, not only in practice and in the building, football building, but in games on the sideline. So obviously that's a fairly big change, because then you basically open up the staff to an unlimited amount of coaches who can be hands-on with players. It's something coaches have pushed for years now. In fact, this same proposal was introduced last year and was rejected by the D1 council, partly because of the fear that there will be a proliferation in coaching staff sizes. That is one part of this. I think the second part of this is much more interesting, and that's the recruiting piece. So according to the proposal, the 11 countable coach, the maximum amount of coaches you can have on the road off campus recruiting is 11, the 11 countable head coach and 10 assistants. So that's still the same. However, you've kind of blended the two groups now, right? You blended the support staff guys who now can coach with the countable coaches. So in a way, it does give a head coach flexibility to take maybe, say, like, this is an example, but an older offensive line coach who doesn't want to go out in the road recruiting anymore, you know, and take a support staff member, promote him to an assistant offensive line coach, and make him your countable recruiter who goes on out to the road. That is pretty interesting, right? Because you could have staffs evolve into two separate kind of divisions. You could have a group of recruiters and a group of X's and O's
front office
type of position coaches and coordinators, right? It's kind of an NFL type model. Now, some coaches I talked to believe that that won't necessarily happen at many places, because position coaches will still want to do the recruiting and go visit the campuses and homes and start building relationships. But other coaches tell me, no, they think that this rule will be, if it does pass, will be kind of manipulated like many rules in the NCAA, and you'll have separate scouting or recruiting teams whose sole job will be to go out on the road while all the, quote, coaches, X's and O's, tactical guys hang back. So now this is, again, just a proposal, and it was rejected last year by the D1 council. So it's got a six-week socialization period where they'll receive feedback, and then the NCAA football oversight, who originally introduced the proposal, will meet again in mid-May to probably, I think they'll probably eventually adopt it. But then it is subject to the approval of the D1 council. And so we'll see if this year they will give their stamp of approval.
So, I mean, the big difference between, as Dan alluded to there, like the NFL, an NFL front office and college, is the fundamental difference of talent acquirement. Is the NFL, they draft, so they go out to watch players perform, and they view them as potential employees that they don't have to win over in any way. In college, the recruiters go out on the road to watch what, first of all, whether they can perform, but then to start building a relationship. So the offensive line coach has familiarity with the star offensive tackle he's trying to get and that guy's family. And then you've got that relationship, and they get in the building, and the player has somebody they feel close to who's been there since they were a junior in high school. And, hey, you know what? My girlfriend broke up with me. I need somebody's office I need to go in and talk to. Well, there he is. You know, I think there's value clearly to what's gained in face-to-face recruiting by people who become your coaches. So I'm sure there are some people that don't want to do it. I wouldn't want to do it at a certain age, probably like at the age I'm at right now. If you gave me the opportunity to not be an on-the-road recruiter, I'd say thank you. But I do think there's a lot of value that's gained in that that could be at risk of not being there going forward. I don't know. We'll see.
The recruiting pit, because that's the part you always hear the coaches say they like getting to the NFL. It's just football.
Right.
And they don't really have to do, you know, these guys, and they're just They may help a little bit in draft prep, but it's not this, the not recruiters. And then you could just get this, you know, they've always had these guys on staff. So they say, oh, he's just, you know, he's basically a recruiter. You know, he's not really a coach, just super smooth.
Right.
Like this could be like we get the really smooth dudes. Like they don't even know anything about football. See the singles bar. Like this guy's a real talker, man. He can just sell. I mean, like if you sell like medical devices, you don't know how the thing works, but you're the one who can smooth the head nurse. She puts in the order, right? Like this is just straight salesman. This could be wild.
It could, you know. And there's this was brought up to me by an athletic director, because I think many of the ADs were one of the reasons that, you know, they pushed back against it last year, why it failed, because they were afraid of several things. One, the blowing, you know, the increasing of staff sizes in salaries too, right? But one of the ADs mentioned something really interesting to me, and that's if you do separate the two, and you have back home your coaches, and then you have these separate 6, 8, 10 just recruiters. Well, those recruiters don't necessarily have to live where your school is. Yeah. Maybe they set up shop as a scouting department in another state.
Just sit in Atlanta or something like that. Yeah.
Well, like NFL scouts who don't live where their franchise is.
Yeah. Couldn't you see Ohio State or something setting up a bureau in Orlando, Florida with their recruiter there? Or recruiters,
Work from home, yeah. Spread out.
So that is certainly something that's concerning for administrators. We'll see if that comes up over the next few weeks.
Interesting.
Yeah. Go kill like a men's wrestling team so that we can have a recruiting bureau in Orlando.
Priorities, man. Priorities.
Yeah.
One more guy. Yep. All right. People's Court. This show has been all over the map.
Rain us in.
Yeah, let's land this plane if we can. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to this story. It's a man named Justin Wood, and he is a juggler, you know, juggling.
Mm-hmm.
He's a juggler. Yep. And he has a YouTube channel which highlights trips taken with his service animal, which is a duck.
We're hitting a lot of hot buttons already.
Yeah.
Wrinkle the Duck is the name of the duck. Wrinkle. Wrinkle the Duck. Anyway, Justin, he juggles and he goes around with his duck. And apparently his YouTube channel, it has 2.7 million subscribers. So I can't put any shade on it because we sure ain't getting that on our YouTube channel. That said, we neither juggle. I can juggle, but I won't. I could. Probably get more. Will that help our YouTube numbers? Is that what it'll take? I'll juggle.
Maybe.
Juggle. I don't have a duck. See? Do I need a duck? Wrinkle the Duck. Justin and Wrinkle the Duck, exploration, the adventures of Wrinkle the Duck. He calls it his service duck. It seems like this duck is basically content, a content creator. He took it to a Buc-ee's, you know, the convenience store Tennessee and tried to film a deal. He put Wrinkle in a stroller. Wrinkle basically rides in the stroller, but occasionally comes out to give shoppers high fives with his beak because people get excited to see Wrinkle. There's this whole bit that I had no idea existed, this world of juggling and duck influencers.
Quite a combination.
America's in a weird spot. It's in a weird spot, right? How are we not more popular? How is this more popular? How is this exponentially more popular?
Yeah, right. Please watch our YouTube channel so that we're not just trounced by a duck and a juggler.
Can you please tell your friends to listen? At least listen to this podcast for 1 minute so our numbers go up so I don't have to be embarrassed when talking to my bosses that we're getting trounced by a duck and a juggler. Please. I'm here. I'm trying. You know, I don't try hard, obviously, in this podcast, but I try a little. It's free. You get what you pay for. Anyway, he's at the Buc-ee's, and employee tells him pets are not allowed. We get into the existential threat of this is a service animal. Clearly it is not, but he has someone has labeled wrinkled a service animal. So he's got the ID. The Bucky's employee says the problem is wrinkle is not, you can watch the whole video if you want. Can he put it on a leash? They said, yes. He doesn't have a leash, so he puts him on an invisible leash. So he's kind of like a mime also.
Oh my
this guy,
gosh.
Multi-talented.
Oh,
anyway,
my goodness.
The cops show up and all goes on. And Bucky's has come out strong and said, you are banned from life from all Bucky's.
Wow.
For life, not just the duck. This guy's life. No juggling, no ducks, no stroller. You nothing. You cannot get into Bucky's anymore. Banned. So, Justice Dellinger, we'll start with you. Thoughts on this ruling by Bucky's? Justified or not?
That seems severe, Dan. For life, banned from all Bucky's. Seems very severe. I might need to watch the video to see if this
more
is
views.
Warranted. Yeah,
we're just throwing more views at him. You know.
Yeah, but I will say, you know, as Pat has bemoaned often, the service animal and traveling with a service animal is pretty annoying, I think, for many of us. So I do get that, but this seems severe. I don't necessarily agree with lifetime ban. Maybe a lifetime ban for the duck. I don't know what duck life bans are, but maybe the duck's not allowed back, Dan, ever.
Can you get gas? Can you get a car wash? Like,
yeah,
what's the extent of?
I stand with big convenience here. Big gas, whatever you want to call them. That hell yes, they're banned for life. Get that duck out of there. Get this freak who wants to juggle and put his duck on a mime leash out of there. Nope, you're gone. You flouted Bucky's, man. You can't cross Bucky's. You do that, you got to pay the price. So I am fully in support of a lifetime ban. I would like to point out there's no such thing as high-fiving a duck. It's a low five. All right?
What if it's flying?
A beak? I wouldn't know fly. How to high-five a duck's
I mean,
like,
if it's
beak?
If it flew up to the level where you could raise your arm to high-five it, fine. But I suspect no. Wrinkle fraud.
Bucky's has a beaver as a logo.
That's just a logo. They don't have the thing walking around the store. If they did, it would ransack the place. Beavers are badasses. Don't mess with them.
I don't. I rarely run into them. I don't know about you. I don't.
I've seen them in action. Look
two, out. I'm on the Bucky's website. Bucky's holds two world records. This is another to go back to the Guinness. Can we do something with the world record guy? What was it?
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah. It has the world's largest convenience store. Sevierville? Where is that? Is that in
Sevierville, Tennessee?
Tennessee. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. Seen that. Sevierville, Tennessee. It is 74,707 square feet of convenience store.
That is a lot of buckets.
A lot of convenience. It also has a 255-foot conveyor for its car wash. I don't know where the location that is. Wait, they're showing me. That's at the one in, is that the same place? That's the one in Katy, Texas.
Okay.
255. Your car should be washed after 255 feet.
70,000 square feet of bucket. Like, did they have is it a duplex? I mean, do they have people live there?
I don't know. I'm looking it up on a map right
it's
now.
Immense.
Yeah.
Sevierville's it's Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to go there. Forget Dolly
Collins
World.
Says 5 to 10 years is the usual duck lifespan. And that is not a long enough ban for our dude.
That seems like a penalty enough. Of course, the guy would probably come back in with a new duck.
So. See, he will. He'll just they come didn't... back with a new duck.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cheating to get around it. I don't know. This on the map. It's a Google Maps. It's still an empty parking lot. So get your act together, Google. I don't know. It's a big. It looks kind of too. It's big. I'm seeing photos. Anyway. Enjoy Bucky's, everyone, and now you'll be duck free. If you got a duck, get out of here.
Keep it on the pond.
We don't want
you. Man, I used to have a duck. Well,
You what?
My parents bought me. Yeah.
Pet ducks.
So buried the lead here.
My when
I'm
I was
guessing,
when
you were, I'm guessing girls weren't a big part of your life at that time.
Dan, come on, man. It's a low blow.
Girls love the duck. It's got a duck.
South
there,
Louisiana. Right? When we lived in South Louisiana, my parents bought me what they thought was a duck. And so I had the duck. Quacker was the duck's name. Had
it How old were you at this point?
I was probably, you know, 4 to 6. Oh, age 4 okay. to 6, probably. Right.
That's acceptable duck range. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, thank you. Oh, good. Range. I'm glad it's cleared. Been cleared. So Quacker, you know, would hop around the backyard. I'd mess around with him. And about a year in or so, maybe even less than that, Quacker started to get pretty ugly and mean. And it also grew very large, started to grow very large very quickly. And we ended up figuring out it was some Cajun swamp goose.
What?
Not a duck at all. So I had gotten attached to Quacker despite him pecking at me and almost killing me multiple times in our backyard. And so we had to load him up in the pickup truck and drive him to the swamp let him go because he was terrorizing the family. So we let him go, and it was a very sad day to see Quacker go out into the swamp.
I bet. Young Ross Dellinger crying all the way home.
Yeah, yes.
Man.
Pour one out for Quacker.
Yeah, for Quacker. That's right.
Pour one out. Rest in
power. I got to talk to Coach Dell about this.
Yeah, good job, Mom and Dad, right? Bought like a little duckling on the side of the road they were selling, of course, in like Louisiana, and it turns into some crazy-ass terrorizing goose.
Wasn't even a duck. Well, it's good that you've, you know, they probably like, hey, probably forget about it. Clearly not.
No.
Clearly
no.
Not.
Haunts me.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
All right. That's probably good for the pod, huh?
I think we're done.
That's probably it.
I think we're done.
I think we're done.
Thanks for listening if you're still listening. Breaking down the brackets. How's your bracket? Bracket busted.
Oh, the show. What's your history with ducks? Go ahead.
Oregon lost, so that's it. We'll tie it in. Yeah, we will. Thanks for subscribing and sharing us on social media and telling your friends about us. We will talk to you later.